In today's ever-changing job market, personal branding is no longer a luxury afforded by influencers and leaders alone. Long story short, you need to stand out. Whether it's employers, investors, hiring managers, customers, you have a lot of people to impress. It's not just enough to be good, you need to be influential. If you are looking at maximizing your personal and professional growth, Remarkably You is the podcast that will help you get seen, noticed, and hired. Your host, Greg Chapman, that's me, chats with up-and-coming professionals on the tips and strategies they used to stand out above the rest. I'll be dissecting their methods to find effective strategies that you can use for creating your very own brand.
Hi, everyone. Today's guest is Sharmishtha Mitra. And Sharmishtha has an interesting combination of being a business leader as well as a HR leader. So, most of the time when I get onto a call that I'm dealing with an HR leader, then typically the experience has been purely HR. But to have someone who's seen business as well as HR, that's an interesting combination. And we're going to talk about a whole bunch of stuff, looking at things from a business perspective as well as an HR perspective, especially when it comes to building your personal brand. Sharmishtha, thank you for taking the time.
Thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be getting into a conversation with you, Greg.
Thanks. So, Sharmishtha, if you could just quickly jump in and say, can you give us a brief arc of how you started off and where you are at, just touching on the highlights, that would be a nice place to start.
So I started off actually my career in business and did that for about 14 odd years. Then one of the organizations whom I joined subsequently was looking at a business leader to support them in merger and acquisition culture, etc. So that seemed like a very interesting opportunity, especially after being in business with leavers. But more importantly, that was a stage when my children were small and I was traveling for work a lot. So it was creating a little bit of, emotional turmoil in them. So I was at that point in time looking at a role which allows me to use my business learnings, at the same time allows me to kind of apply in the HR domain, the people domain. I did not think about it as HR then, to be very honest. I thought something which would not require me to travel but allows me to use my business strengths. And then this opportunity came, and so I liked it. And they were also incidentally looking at someone who is not that time pure play HR, but someone who has got a business experience. So that's how my journey in HR actually started.
I started from business. So I'm wondering over here that, when you're transitioning from business to HR or vice versa, so you're looked upon with the credibility of having a business as let's say ops or business. People say, wow, she knows how to do her stuff. She knows how to run the show. But when you're going into HR, so people are, I can only imagine that people would be saying, well, she's from business, right? But I don't know if she'll cut it in HR. People are looking out. So that transitory period is from a completely different background to another background is tough, is tenuous. So how did you manage that? How did you, prove to the people around?
Sir, your voice is breaking a little bit.
Okay, any better now?
Sorry, your voice is breaking a bit.
Okay, any better now?
Yeah.
So when you were transitioning, how did you, from business to HR, how did you build your credibility within, people looking at you now with the HR lens that she knows her stuff when it comes to HR, despite her having been in business?
as in, you know this, so all business managers actually double up as HR managers. Actually, back in those days, we would have many of our discussions during performance rating will be on competencies. We all had to give examples on those competencies, how we have demonstrated it throughout the year, so on and so forth. So you would get your bonus basis your numbers, but you would get your, you know, kind of rating basis your competencies that you've demonstrated. So likewise, there were many other HR practices which the business managers had to lead for themselves and their teams. So then, hence, you know, considering all that, I felt kind of, you know, prepared. But so what happened was, it was very interesting. So when the opportunity came, I said, if they have got me for this role, they must have seen something. So let me use my, you know, what should they call it, tacit knowledge of HR and knowledge of business to understand how do you integrate businesses, because it was an M&A opportunity. And how do you engage people during that process? And I also took help, you know, of people. Who, of course, understood us from own's experience then, because you had to lead it and see if it works. But be very open to change. Now, when the first couple of such projects or initiatives worked, that's the point I felt that now it's time for me to really learn the subject as well. So that's when I went through lots of research myself, read up a lot. And also went ahead and did kind of certifications required. But very importantly, I always realized that my strength lies in creating models, creating plans, understanding the pulse of the business and connecting it to the people's story. I understood that was my strength. So very freely and courageously, I went ahead and created models and stuff like that. And then, you know, got it kind of connected back. So that's the way I sort of went ahead with it. And then learned it. These tools kind of came in parallel. And many a time I observed that what we ended up creating as a model as a team and what those, you know, so-called researches or the management books are saying are not very different. And I think that discovery gave us a lot of mental confidence that we are on the right track. But for ensuring that you are, you know, also keeping it in context. So I kept creating as well as studying, I would say, in parallel.
So in fact, that's what I was just going to ask you, saying that, you know, what do you attribute the success of your those initial few projects too, and you very nicely, you know, spelt that out of how, you know, the whole view of it as a project and getting things to make and to work and looking at the, you know, models and what models would apply over here, probably creating the required model. Now, oftentimes, these models that we're talking about, you know, they're looked upon as, I mean, whoever, whether it's Scott Phillips, I know Kotter comes to my mind for some odd reason, or Jim Collins, or all these big daddies and big mommies out there. So they've got these models in place. But people, you know, the reaction of people has typically been, that's theory. You know, these models, there's a lot that falls outside these models. You just can't box it. Like something like as simple as situational leadership, right? It's been around and it's one of the most famous models, or even if it's, let's say, Stephen Covey's four quadrants, then, you know, no matter, so what I'm getting at is, no matter how popular, how famous, how strong the model is, of course, it always has its weakness, but people often view models as something that's very theoretical. So how do you take the theoretical framework and make it, and maybe if you have an example, I don't know if you do, how to take something which is theoretical and make it very commonplace, make it, you know, rubber hit the road kind of a thing, make it work, make it practical.
So I think, you know, I was asked in one of my early interviews when I was kind of moving from business to HR, maybe the answer lies there. So I was asked, what's the strength that you bring in? So I said, the only strength that I bring in is to feel the pulse.
Okay.
And so I think, but that is something that I, you know, kind of continued to do in business. In Levers, one of the very successful programs we ran for many years. Mm-hmm. And those days, our chairman, Vindi Banga, used to lead it, mm-hmm. which is to feel the pulse. You have to really go to someone's house as mm-hmm. From a research perspective, but you keep yourself, in a way, anonymous. You mm-hmm. don't kind of share that you represent the company. The idea is to get feedback without any bias. Mm-hmm. So this whole process of constantly listening to your customer, to your consumer, interacting with them and feeling the pulse of the business, talking to them, understanding what's working, not working, you know, and I think this constant interactions made it fairly kind of, I would say, a significant contribution to what we created, I must say. So I remember in one of the initiatives that we're launching in one of my companies, and when I joined, this was a talent initiative, so very, very critical for the high potentials. It was launched with a lot of love and care, but it didn't kind of work. So when we saw the feedback, we got the feedback done with the business by an external consultant. And the feedback said that most of the time, said, I don't know, you know, what's going on. So when we relaunched the program, a lot of time we spent actually, then we created a council. Mm-hmm. We created a governance council. Then we created an operating council. Then we involved the managers as well. Mm-hmm. So the governance council was responsible, for example, for the design. Mm-hmm. The operating council would then help us operationalize it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the managers would then be leading the flag for us, mm-hmm. for their team. So there's nothing hidden from anyone. It's very transparent. Everyone's involved. Everyone's aware. So A, that built a certain kind of energy. B, the councils had people who are HR expertise, but mm-hmm. also had business leaders. So it's a great combination. And if we were working with academia, so we would mm-hmm. also invite academia to be part mm-hmm. of those councils, at least for some reasons, let's say an IMA or something like that. Mm-hmm. So this tripod kind of thing worked very well. You know, for us, and I saw then subsequently for any change management initiative, you know, this tripod working works very well, and that's a fantastic way for HR to build connect with the business within the HR, the various communities of HR, as well as the project initiators, whoever. So it's always kind of a tripod, and sometimes it's like a diamond. When you also have your external partners joining in. So that model, I thought, you know, helped us really be on track.
Okay. So I think that there's a lot of gold over there, especially for, I think, somebody moving into a leadership role in HR. And that's the kind of person I have in mind when I want to ask you a bit of a case study question. You know, I'm keeping somebody who's been like spent some time in HR, 7, 8, 9 years in HR, and is now leading more into a leadership role within HR, right? Let's say since you've worked a lot with Levers and Axis Bank, and also I would say if somebody's moving into a role in HR, a leadership role in HR for an organization, which is a kind of a legacy organization. It's not a startup. It's not a SME. It's a legacy organization. Some processes are in place. You know, your basic processes are in place, where it's comp and bend recruitment, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So what does a person moving into HR need to do in terms of how does a person draw out a roadmap? Like, let's say, not a very long roadmap, because I'm assuming that, you know, people need to prove themselves really fast. I was reading somewhere the first 90 days is absolutely critical for, you know, proving yourself, your own brand, how people look at you and stuff like that. So somebody just moving in, how would you roadmap it out? What would your advice be to somebody becoming a new HR leader, even an L&D leader, saying, so HR and L&D leader, just move into this room. What's the roadmap looking like? And it's something from a 90 days to, you know, short 6 months or some 3 to 6 months. What should a person do? An organization like that, a legacy, processes in place, etc.
Yeah, so that's a great question. I think the first thing that really helps is immerse and understand the business, mm-hmm. You know, travel and where the action is, that is where the business is happening. So for a Leavers, it would typically be a retail shop, since mm-hmm. you asked a question. For an mm-hmm. Axis Bank, it would be typically the branch mm-hmm. From where things happen. Or other centers like your operations is a mm-hmm. is a very big one. Mm-hmm. Then your loan centers, the asset centers, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's very important to immerse. Mm-hmm. Even in Coca-Cola, I remember a very beautiful way of immersion was you actually sit next to a truck driver who is supplying your Coke mm-hmm. bottles to shop every mm-hmm. morning. Mm-hmm. And you actually travel the market with him. Mm-hmm. And then through that process, you essentially kind of got connected to, you know, everyone else who and the sales people on the field, the retailers. So likewise, I think that immersion, even in Axis Bank, for example, visiting the branches. You had a question?
Yeah, sorry. So immersion. So like, let's say the Japanese have an interesting term for it. Genchi Genbutsu, I think. Right. So you're sitting in the truck, mm-hmm. you're going with the truck driver, you're getting off, or you're sitting in, you know, one of the loan departments and so on. So you're watching, you've got paper, pen or iPad and whatever. What kind of questions are you asking people? Are you asking questions? Are they direct questions? How are you understanding the guts of the business?
Yeah. The immersion is, you know, basically conversations. It's more your being. So as a being, you have to the curiosity, etc. It's more than speaking. It's your own being. It's your own eagerness. It's your own interest. I think somehow that translates to the other person's, you know, kind of response. Because if we ask too many questions right in the beginning, we may be limiting our own understanding. Mm. So it is better to hence, you know, even if you have to like, actually hence conversations, you know, when you are conversing with someone, the exchange of energies also, if I may use that word, very different. Mm. And hence it becomes more open and you get to understand a lot more. Than, you know, really asking very specific questions. But through the conversation, if you then, you know, what you're looking for, if you've already got them, then that's great. If you have not, then you ask. If you have picked up new insights during the conversation, then, you know, dig deeper. Mm. If you observe something in the space, right, which catches your attention, which you then want to know more of, etc. And I think before the immersion, it is important to also spend time with leaders in the organization, understand what are their expectations, understand what are the challenges that they wish to overcome, and understand on ground what are the realities that they are experiencing, what is giving them joy, what is not giving them joy. So you are not going blind, etc. So you have got a sense of, you know, the system. Mm. You got a sense of expectation from your role, and then you're going ahead and immersing yourself where the actions are. And so you know what signs you're looking for, but many a times, you know, you also pick up new signals and signs, and then you kind of work around them. So then once you've done the immersion also has to be done with a purpose. Typically, it's a great idea to be able to put together a 2 to 3 year kind of a plan. If you have to call it strategic, then you can call it that. At least in the first attempt, the second attempt, maybe a 3 to 5 year plan. So in the first leg, maybe a 2 to 3 year plan. And of course, you know, connect it to impact matrices. Mm. What impact do you see delivering? So a plan with actions and impact matrices. and connect it to what you have observed, because people, what you are hearing. So many a times I would say, what am I hearing? Mm-hmm. And then put those 7-8 points first. So this is what I'm hearing, and they're quite diverse. Mm-hmm. And then you build your plan connected to what you are hearing, and then you say what you're going to impact. The good news of doing that is what you are hearing, you know, if they are connecting, when you are presenting the plan to, you know, leaders in the organization, if they connect to that, mm-hmm. then two things happen. They also start realizing and that, okay, in a short period of time, you've been able to pick up the right signals. Mm. So then they start building some confidence in your understanding of the organization. Mm. The other thing that happens is if you have missed out something or there's a nuance that needs to be added, then they would give you those insights, and then you kind of get that in. So that if you have to tweak or flex your plan somewhere, you can do that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the initiatives that you're going to take and the results that you're going to give. So then you put together a plan, and then you keep kind of reviewing it over every quarter as to how you're progressing along with the people, and then see, are you on track and what needs to be done, so on and so forth.
I think that's a very step-by-step way of, you know, building your credibility within the organization, especially very quickly. This is not saying we'll build credibility after a year. We'll see.
Yeah.
It's not build credibility now. And you know what I've been writing, first go meet people, the leaders and stuff, and figure out what's keeping them awake at night, what are their pain points and stuff. And after that, go see, as you're calling it, immersion. After the immersion, you're saying chunking, if I picked that up correctly. So there are lots of stuff happening, but you know, I'm connecting these dots. Here is the patterns that are emerging, or here are the chunks that are emerging, and then basis that you're, you know, putting a plan together. Now, one of the things I just wanted to get in sideways was that, you know, when you've put that plan together and you're presenting it to the leaders, I imagine, and then you said, so if it connects with the leaders, then they know that, okay, this person knows what they're talking about, has done their legwork. I would imagine when you're doing your immersion, what was interesting, you said, don't ask too many questions. Hold on a second, just watch and observe. When you're watching and observing, you're also watching and observing for stories, right? And so those same stories, when you're presenting in the plan, can also, you know, really connect. Nothing connects as well as a good, quick story told well. And then really nuancing it and say, hey, you know, what I have missed out and what needs to be added. And then, of course, making it a continuous improvement kind of thing. So I think that's a nice detailed roadmap. A lot of people can take away from that.
Yeah, thank you, if that helps.
Yeah, of course. Okay, so from there, wanted to go to say, all right, so that's a roadmap. Now, I want to shift gears a little bit. So this was for somebody getting into HR, okay, and becoming successful in HR, and you know, how do I build my credibility and stuff. You've also shared something very interesting that if you don't know about HR, you go read. There's so much out there, so many certifications, which cost us $500 sometimes, you know, on Udemy and whatnot. That, it's just about your willingness and your. I think one big competency there would be curiosity. Whether it, when you're, you know, the immersion phase or the learning phase. I think one big competency is curiosity. But so changing gears now, I'm saying, what about as an HR, you would have seen a lot of, you know, as business, you have hired a lot of people, counseled a lot of people, mentored a lot of people, seen a lot of conflict, et cetera, et cetera. So I want to take it to the other end of the spectrum and say somebody becoming a leader, becoming a manager for the first time, or somebody who has just a few years experience as a manager. I've mentioned this a few times, the personal brand. That's, you know, what this podcast also explores. The personal brand for a, if I say the word personal brand, people would normally associate it with, excuse me, a thought leader, a CXO, a senior leader, and so on, or an entrepreneur. But my question is that I think personal brand is important. Creating it is important. Does someone becoming a manager stand a chance, have an opportunity to build their personal brand? And if so, what are some of the things that you've seen? That you've seen great managers doing that have helped them come up the curve fast, get noticed fast, get promoted fast?
Yeah. So, you know, two, three things. One is their willingness to support the cause that they're a part of, you know, but while they're willing to support, of course, they take some time to understand what is expected out of them, but then they're also willing to contribute sometimes by sticking their neck out or by being courageous to say, you know, to very senior leaders that, boss, you see this, I know you want to do this, but I thought this alternate is a better one. Mm-hmm. And these are my reasons, mm-hmm. right? They get into that conversation with you, right? Mm-hmm. They're actually not challenging you. And you can see the idea is not a challenge and there's no confusion there. The idea is to assess the environment and support and yet give one's own point of view. So having a point of view early enough, you know, support, willing to support the cause and learn, then having a point of view, again, for the purpose of the cause and make it better, and do it kind of in a manner of influencing and respect. And then finally taking charge to implement and also follow the directions that comes in the way or the feedback to make them more successful. And finally, creating a lot of connect just by being very committed, very authentic, you know, and to the cause, you know, creates a sense of, I would say, camaraderie. I've seen with a lot of people around. And then, you know, I can think of two, three people in the team, same peer group, right? A set of people doing this and a set not doing this. And storytelling, like you talked about, an anecdotal example. So one of them doing this. So we also had this whole ritual of cake cutting. Okay. And typically we have to tell people, oh, come, we are cutting the cake for so-and-so. People are busy in their things and all of that. Some can come, some cannot come. But I've seen, you know, with a couple of them who really operate on this path, you would suddenly see everyone of the department, right, from a senior to everyone else, is senior most, is there. You don't even need to drag them out. They say, oh, it's so-and-so's birthday, we're all there.
Well, good indicator.
And that person may not be working with everyone, but it's a goodwill has spread. The energy has spread, right? And if they continue on this path of, you know, serving with commitment, with confidence, with influencing, with initiative, creating impact, following through, taking directions, and remaining humble, I've seen them, you know, keep growing. And they are actually know the future leader material.
I think that's very true. You can gauge a future leader very nicely, very quickly. And a nice indicator is the birthday cake cutting. That's an amazing indicator, right? Now, you know, going back to what you said, immersion. An immersion is a superpower, you know, that, and it's a super tool that you can use in order to understand, like you said, the pulse of the business and stuff. But I'm just saying that somebody just getting into as a manager, a first-time manager, I don't know if that person's going to have the bandwidth of, you know, traveling and going to the different places or not. Sometimes is not allowed. Sometimes, you know, it's, but why do you want to do that? That's not what you're required to do. You just sit down here and, you know, do your stuff over here. What's required of you? So how does somebody like that get into immersion, get into the pulse of the business? And, you know, I hear this a lot. Be more strategic. One of the big things when it comes to first-time managers and stuff is be more strategic. And a lot of people grapple with, it's not that they don't want to be, it's a lot of times they don't know how to be strategic, right? So
yeah,
what's your take on that? How does somebody like that get to feel the pulse of the business?
Actually, you know, when people are saying be more strategic, essentially it starts with the, what people want to observe is, that starts with another B, which is behaviors, right? Mm-hmm. So people actually wish to see a certain kind of, you know, behavior to be kind of demonstrated or come to life, etc. So when they say be more strategic, that's what, you know, they could possibly be kind of looking for. Mm-hmm. So, so the behaviors that people can easily demonstrate is the curiosity that you talked about, that are they searching information, right, regarding their work? Or if I'm in HR, let's say, do I reach out to my peers in other similar organizations and find out what's going on there, information search? And once I find that out, am I being able to also see in my organization, and also likewise, you know, draw information, what's happening in the scope of work that you are responsible for? So once you have these kind of two information available to you, external and internal, then are you getting into really waiting for directions, or are you also understanding where the problems and issues are and bringing that up for conversation?
Yeah.
And you are also then take with some help trying to get into root causes of the problems that, you know, we are having, because then when you find solution to that, it's slightly more effective. And then eventually, you know, it is really about, you know, the taking the right decisions, you know, decision making, using the, you know, the right options, and then coming out with decisions, with options, etc. Yeah. So those things.
Yes. The root cause analysis, the problem is a big one. And what I've noticed is that somebody transitioning from an individual contributor to a manager, what's happened is that I have put in so much of effort to become a good problem solver, you know, which is also required as a manager. But I have built up this pride. I can solve problems like that. You said a very interesting thing about influencing, right? Now, and the whole decision-making piece. And the decision-making piece is not just restricted to I'll roll up my sleeves and go and do stuff. The decision-making is also how do I get other people into it. So what I see is that it's a little bit of a, it's rather ironical, because I've put in so much of effort. I've gotten into my ability to problem solve, be analytical, do stuff by myself as an individual contributor. And that's what actually got me promoted in the first place. Now that I am promoted in the first place, I need to let go of some of that. I need to kill my darlings a little bit, right? So my question, I think, is twofold, and however you want to respond to that. So one is that, how does a person let go of something like that? You know, because, you know, you tell them intellectually also, they get it. It's not that they don't, but the wiring is there. You know, I was so good at doing this problem. And I think the other piece is, which is building off of this, is to some people, influencing just comes naturally. But for a few others, you know, I'm just looking out, you know, I'm trying to make it valid for these people who are influencing, and networking doesn't come naturally for them. So how does somebody go and build a network, begin to influence, some small baby steps?
So I think one of the, you know, influencing requires possibly two things. One is preparation. Second is also at the back of it, right? As we said before, we want to influence someone, we should have influence self, and we should have influenced other people who can influence this individual. Mm-hmm. Influence the ones who are likely to influence whom I'm trying to influence. So there's a lot of back-end work I've seen usually needs to be kind of done.
Mm-hmm.
Influencing, I think if we take it as a formal process, more often than not, it mm-hmm. fails, because in a formal setup, everyone is like kind of so tight and, mm-hmm. you know, wanting to do the right things, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera. So there has to be some preparation, some homework, some insight, some understanding one needs to have before you go ahead and influence. Even if it's a 1:1 influencing, you know, the person should have some insight or some appreciation. What do you want to come and really talk about? Mm. Those stuff. So
the homework would homework would extend only to what you want to talk about in the problem, or homework would also extend to other facets?
Many things. So homework could extend to what you want to talk about, the data, the insights that you carry with you. That's an important part of the homework. Another part of the homework is you should have possibly bounced it off some other people who knows this person and understand, you know, where could his or her interests lie. Another bit of homework can be to, you know, create the plan in collaboration with the people whom this person is naturally going to rely on.
Wow.
Right.
Okay.
And do that kind of in advance, and then kind of go ahead and talk about it. So that kind of a process usually is likely to work more than, I mean, and of course, you know, there are some small things in it to influence on, you don't do so much, but if it is larger initiatives of importance, then it is better to go through the whole hog and maybe bites of this, even if it is small level influencing. Another thing that I learned from a leader in influencing has stayed with me. He said, you know, influencing, we all knew it's win-win, but his definition of win-win was very interesting. So he said, whenever I get into influencing, and this was a procurement head, so he's buying, he's all the power to say no. But what he did is he would actually, the one who's come to sell to him, he said, first I tried and assessed what is their big problem. And how can I help them to solve their problem?
Wow. What is their problem?
Wow. And which may or may not be connected to the conversation. More often than not connected, right? And then, you know, with his prudence, with his network, with his connections, with his thoughts, with his strategy. So he helps them. Helps them to find a way to solve their problem. Now, the moment that happens, something very beautiful happens, which we call connect. That's when a connect happens. And the moment that connect happens is when, you're really kind of living this whole element of 1:1, I mean, influencing, which is win-win. So you let the other person win first. And then naturally they would like you to win as well. Yeah. So that.
That's Cialdini. So very interesting. So what I hear you say is, you know, twofold. One is that do your homework. So one is pre-meeting. Do your homework. And your homework is what I really like. What I learned today is that when you're building your plan, build your plan in a collaborative way, but with the people that person relies on. Right? That's social proof. You know, you're also getting to know the other person. So right over there. So that's the first one. In the homework also, and then what can spill into the meeting is also figuring out what is their problem. That's how you're defining win-win. So when I put that, it's not it's not a question, what is your problem? Because it's something like asking you, how are you? Right? People don't respond what's actually happening. And it's something that you need to hold and try and piece the pieces of the puzzles together to come up with it.
So,
but just hold that in your mind and say, hey, you know what? And it may not come in the first meeting. It may take some time, but what keeps this person awake at night? Or what's the problem? Get the answer. I see that a lot of what we're talking about is looping back to the competence. I don't know if a few people have it on the competency framework, I guess. But the competence of curiosity, saying, It was going back to the immersion piece. It's coming in here and influencing. What is this problem? Where is he coming from? Or where is she coming from? And, you know, why is this person getting happy or pissed off or, you know, impatient or being patient? But where is this person coming from? Where is the shoe pinch? And I think if we are doing that, if we are engaging in this, then, and if we're able to even, I think, acknowledge the problem also. Solving the problem, of course. But even if you're able to acknowledge and figure out that, yeah, this is the problem, then there's that whole reciprocity thing kicking in that you spoke of. Now this person's taken effort to figure out what makes a difference to me. Hey, I think I need to, you know, and that's what then gives rise to a good connection. So, yeah, cool. We've covered a lot of ground, Sharmishta. Thank you. This has been awesome. And you know, as we come to a close, I just have just a couple of questions for you. Your arc, the trajectory of your career has been quite vast. You've covered a lot. You've also done a nice TED talk that I was watching.
Thank you.
I have two questions. And the first one is, what advice would the Sharmishta of today give the Sharmishta of, let's say, someone just starting out their career?
I just somehow feel I was wiser when I started off.
Okay.
I would say that, our work is actually a means to an end. Works I read about it a while back. Okay. I realized that now.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, and relax a little bit, chill a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
So those are, because I think then it is easier for you to touch your true potential, the possibilities, the connections, and etc. And I think that's what I would suggest anyone who is starting off, or if I have to see myself then, I think I did that in the initial years quite well.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a time when I took work very, very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I started getting these messages, why are you taking it so seriously and whatever. Not that I looked serious, but I took it very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I would say, that it's a means to an end. Have fun, chill, connect, and keep evolving, and it's okay. You'll be fine eventually. And there's no hurry to get anywhere. This is what I would say. You know, things that Sharmishta could do better. Things that she can continue to do well is, like you said, remain curious. Keep taking assignments, even if there are butterflies in the stomach and you don't know anything about it. Don't worry, you will figure out. There's no rocket science. So go ahead, do them. The third thing I would say is, you know, in the journey of life, sometimes there are relationships which can get a little bit affected. Most of them will get affected positively. Some can get affected a little, you know, negatively. Not negatively, I would say, you know, there could be those, you know, moments, situations. So I would always say that never burn the bridges. Continue to, even if there is something that's, go back and connect and rebuild that. Because there's a lot of learning for both in that process. So be open to that, process of evolution. Yeah. So constantly keep evolving through your successes and areas which, you know, may have been a little bit, but just remain open to everything in the process. continue to remain open.
Yeah.
Life is absurd. It will keep coming up with different things. And not always we may respond to it well. But eventually find a way to respond to it well. So that's what I've always done. So, relationships are...
Very, very wise. Don't burn bridges. You know?
Yeah.
So I think at some point in time, I speak for at least myself. I just wish I had the wisdom back then. Don't burn bridges, you know. And if you do, try and go repair them back again. And I think that's one of the things that has been a learning for me, and I'm trying to repair some of the bridges that got burnt along the way. 70-hour work week. Good thing, bad thing?
It's what is more surprising is it is also times coming from people who said you must shut down at a certain time. So can't say, you know. But I just know that so of course, I mean, if you see that there are, let's say, so I think one can work for, I generally feel people who are serious about their careers are working any which ways, like 60 hours. I don't know whether it has to be 72 or whatever the number is.
72 and a half.
So I don't know. I really don't know that, because I don't think number of hours has really got anything to do with real productivity and outcome. I don't really know what does it mean by when we're saying 272 hours of work means what? Means you have to be physically present, you have to keep producing something for 72 hours. Or I really don't know. So I mean, so I've been someone who always believed, I've always done long work hours myself, but I've never believed that that's how it has to be done for everyone. I don't think there is any kind of cookie cutter approach there. And I don't know what number of hours actually means there. So, and as I said, more surprisingly, it comes from people who also talked about we should shut down at a certain point in time. So I think today, yesterday it was that, today it is this, tomorrow it is still going to be something else. So why comment? Things keep changing.
In fact,
it is an individual's point of view. So
I like the way you answered that. Yeah. I mean, what I hear you saying is, 70, 71, 69, 68, you know, so what's the exact number? We don't know, A. B, going back to saying that versus focusing on the hours, saying, how can I be more productive? And I think the third way, you know, what stands out for me is going back to what you said again, is, you know, being a little compassionate to yourself. I mean, taking it a little easy and chilling out as well. So, and figuring out what works for me and what doesn't.
Yeah, and I think another last most important thing, Greg, is, you know, same set of people were saying something else then, saying something else. We'll say something else tomorrow.
Exactly.
So why should we comment, you know?
Absolutely.
Because in life, we all know there is no one truth.
Yeah, there's no, exactly.
And if I follow, there's no one truth. And if I follow, I'm from Bengal, so as Ramakrishna Dev says, as many opinions are there, so many paths are also there.
That's right.
So it's okay. So there are varied opinions and varied paths to get to the same point.
Correct. For some people, it's okay getting by on 4 hours of sleep. For some people, it's 8 hours is required.
You need 8 hours minimum. So that's what I'm saying. There are some people do work well in the morning. Some work better in the night. And you know, human beings are, I think, far more complex than trying to make them operate like machines. Even machines don't operate.
Yeah.
They also have their, you know, downtimes and all. And I think in today's world, if I may say something, I find this kind of conversations itself a little surprising. Because the same set of people are saying different things.
Yeah.
and they feel we have all forgotten what they have told earlier. And which also means something else will come up tomorrow. Yeah. I don't think people could also stick to that then. I don't think people would stick to this now.
Yeah.
And something else will emerge on its own.
Okay. Yeah. In closure, for our audiences looking at this, and the audiences looking at this are typically from the managerial cadre, what's one message that you'd like to leave them as we close this up?
I would say keep going, keep shining.
Mm-hmm.
All the answers, what's good for you,
mm-hmm.
lies within you.
Mm-hmm.
Do learn from people around you, especially in your peer group, who are doing well, but doing well in an apolitical way. Because very soon, organizational politics will get termed as unethical. That's going to happen.
Yeah.
We've seen already in the OpenAI what just happened, right? So it's your performance, it's your delivery, it's all of that is going to be more important.
Yes.
Get there, learn it from people, see from around you, you know, close to your career trajectory, what are they doing? And one condition is they have to be apolitical people. Please don't pick up wrong things for being successful. And then ask yourself, because we are all 7 billion plus imprints in this world, very diverse. So believe in yourself, your way, so that your uniqueness also someone has to learn from. At the same time, be open to make your journey faster by learning from people around you who is doing well in the right way.
Nice. And I'm so happy we didn't talk about AI. There's so much of it out there, and ChatGPT and stuff. So I'm just happy we had a nice conversation about human beings and networks and influencing and business and stuff like that. So Sharmishtha, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, and if I may, since you touched upon AI, I think AI is going to be an important cog in the wheel, but it's not going to take over our lives. It won't. So in my family, I have AI experts. That's my understanding on speaking to them.
If you
ask them, they would say, like you, please don't ask a single more question about AI. I don't want to talk about it.
No, thanks. Thanks a lot. And it's been a good treat speaking with you.
Thank you. Same here. Thanks for setting this up. Great. And thank you again for being patient. Thank you so much. God bless.
God bless.
Thank you for tuning in for this episode today. I hope you learned something useful. And if so, please remember to leave this podcast a 5-star rating and review. It will help me know that what I share here is making a difference in your career growth. In the next episode, I will meet you again with yet another topic on personal branding for professionals. Till then, keep doing the good work. This is your host, Greg Chapman, on the Remarkably You podcast.